Okay, so I am sitting here today with Sherry Leach. It is February 22nd of 2017. So thank you again for coming and doing this.
You're welcome.
So I guess we can start with, what year did you come to Boyne City? What brought you to Boyne City?
Well, actually, we bought land in 1983.
Okay.
And built a house, which is basically where Ravenhill Discovery Center is right now. And I subbed for the first year that we were up here. We had come up from the Jackson area. And I subbed the first year. And then 3 weeks after the second year started, which was September of 1985, I got a call from Boyne City. They needed a science teacher because Rika Jarema had passed away. So I started 3 weeks after the school year started.
Wow.
With eighth grade and the top reading class, as well as all the eighth grade science classes.
Wow.
I think all of them, or pretty much all of them. So that was the beginning, and then my last year was 95.
Got it. So it's quite a career then.
Yeah, well, a few years before that, downstate.
Yeah.
So.
Have you always been a science teacher?
Yes. Although, you know, every once in a while you have to teach English or math or social studies along with the science, but mostly the science. And in Boyne City, I went from 8th grade to teaching for a while at 7th and 8th grade, because there were three classes of each, and then back to 7th.
Got it.
So.
Got it. And then you founded Ravenhill.
Right.
When did you found that?
We started Ravenhill in 92.
Okay.
And so I taught for 3 years after Ravenhill had started, and Tim ran it. But it was just too much. I couldn't do justice to both.
Right.
So I had to make a decision. And
you've been at Ravenhill ever since?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So one of the questions that we've been asking people is, what's kind of the biggest change that you've seen happen here in Boyne City over the years?
That's a hard one to answer.
It is,
I mean, I guess, I don't know. It seems to be a bustling little town.
It definitely seems to have grown a lot.
It's gone from having a gas station on the corner at the one light to having two lights and no gas station. You know, lots of gift kinds of stores or apparel stores, all that kind of stuff. I guess keeping the open spaces along the lake are one of the things that I like to see the most. Not only the one across from Family Fair that is really new, but some of the other ones over this way. And, you know, they're in between the condos, and I'm not sure I like all the buildings that have gone right up on the water. I wish it was open all the way along.
But at least it's not factories, right?
At least it's not factories, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess that would be what I would focus on as a good change,
a big change. Yeah, I would agree, too, with that. You know, I've lived here my whole life, and I can't believe what a different community Boyne City is just from when I was a kid, even, you know.
Yeah.
So it's really become quite the little spot, you know.
Yeah, it's a destination.
Yeah, right. Yep. So then that means you saw the railroad leave, right? Was that right around, was the railroad here when you got here in 83? No, it was already gone.
Yep.
So. And do you remember the roundhouse being down there?
Vaguely remember the roundhouse, although it could be from pictures. I'm not really sure when that left either.
Got it.
But you try and you said that you're digitizing a lot of the pictures. You try and look back, or you look at some of those pictures and see where they were logging and had chemical factories for tanning hides and things, and boy, it's really changed a lot.
Yeah, definitely.
From those times.
Yeah, you would never get away with anything like that now.
Nor would you want to.
Nor would you want to, right. Yeah, it was kind of interesting when we talked to Lassiter last week, you know, and him, he was talking, because he's a diver, so he dives, you know, does some shipwreck stuff, and he was saying how if you dive over by, like, the Tannery Beach area, there's still some stuff that's down there that's pretty cool. So it's just like, yeah, I wonder what kind of environmental impact that stuff is, you know?
Could be okay if it's something inert like glass, but it could be something that's not so good if it was something inside that glass that...
Right.
Yeah, like I medicine
think,
or something.
And I think he said that there was like a cart that went behind a railroad, mm-hmm. something to do with the train or something. It was like, oh, that's interesting.
Did you ask him why he didn't bring it up? And
he's going to bring it up.
Is he?
Yep, they're going to... But you have to... Now you have to talk to, like, the Army Corps of Engineers and, you know, the DEQ and all these people before you can actually bring anything like that up. So he said that he was thinking about bringing it up and restoring it. So it should be kind of cool.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. So why don't we... We could talk a little bit about some of the different exhibits that you have out at Ravenhill. I know you have one of the old schoolhouses, right?
It's not really a schoolhouse. It used to be Wilson Town Hall. We are in Wilson Township, and when they built their new Township Hall at Fall Park, the old building was only a mile from us, and sitting there. And so I went to talk to them and said, you know, what are you going to do with that? And they asked if we wanted it, so they sold it to us for $1. And Bill Ayton from Boyne Falls.
Yep.
Filmed the whole thing of it being moved. So J&R Ritchie, the house movers, they came and put it up on a trailer, and at 6 o'clock on a sunny morning, they pulled it and they cabled, they put a truck at the top of the hill, and then they had the truck that the building was on, and they cabled the two trucks together so that they could winch it and drive it at the same time. And then it went through the field. I know it was, I had a group of 50 boys there for the Boys Career Expo. And I so wanted to go watch the schoolhouse getting moved, the town hall. But I didn't. I just watched through the window as all of the boys did. So they moved it and put it on a foundation, and we made it our school.
Right.
So.
And it's kind of like... like a restored schoolhouse, right?
Yeah. I mean, all of those buildings, township buildings, schoolhouses, a lot of the community kinds of buildings were built during the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps, and in the 1930s when they were trying to get people back to work. And so they're all the same style. So it can be a schoolhouse just as easily as a town hall.
Right.
And we have desks in there all the way from 1895 to the present.
Wow.
So when families come out, it's not one of those schoolhouses where you go and peek in a door and look at it all pristine and nice. It's lots of different desks and lots of old books of all kinds. So a family can go in, and a lot of times they'll come back with a picture where grandma's sitting in the desk that she used when she was in school, and mom's sitting in the desk she used when she's in school, and daughter. But then there's blackboards and things, so the kids can actually each take a turn at being. So a family will be out there for 45 minutes or so.
Wow, that's cool.
Before they come back in.
So is historical preservation part of your mission out at Ravenhill?
Our mission is to connect science, history, art.
Got it.
In terms of historical preservation, you know, I mean, the schoolhouse isn't really a schoolhouse. It's really a town hall.
Right.
And... So, yes and no, but not in the strictest sense of the word at all.
Okay, got it.
We try to be hands-on and make those connections for people, and if everything's hands-off because you want it to be...
Preserved
exactly as it is.
Got it.
There's a fine line, and it's hard to decide, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, there are some things we don't let people touch, and there are other things that, like we've got lots of furs, and they get wrecked because they're... hanging and they get pulled and they get torn and stuff like that. But how can you have them there if you don't let kids touch them?
Right.
I mean, what's the point?
To feel that connection.
So we of course try to be as historically correct as possible and preserve it as well as we can, but also we want people to interact with things.
Yeah, which is good.
Yeah.
Because it's how they learn, you know, is by interacting with it. Yep, definitely. And I know that Chips is now out there, too, right? You guys have kind of agreed to house them.
And we gave them some space.
Got it.
So they have some display space that they haven't really utilized yet. And then they have some storage space. And that may change at any time, depending on what they decide they want to do. But we had the room, and
they needed the room.
History is part of our mission, so it works.
Yep. Do you guys have any long-term plans for what you're going to do regarding history? Like, do you hope to do some... I mean, I guess you could probably consider the schoolhouse a museum of sorts.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Our history is... CHIPS is Charlevoix County.
Right.
Our history is more world history.
Got it.
So when... when you walk through Jurassic Park, you're going from the time the solar system formed all the way to modern man.
Right.
And you're seeing the changes in the climate as well as the changes in the plants and the animals. If you go to the ancient world, then you're looking at world history. And we have a pyramid and a sphinx and a Roman arch and an Easter Island head and an obelisk. And the obelisk is totally awesome because you can tell the date and the time.
Oh, wow.
With it.
That is really cool.
So everything makes connections. I mean, the obelisk is ancient. It's Egyptian. And everybody knew it was a sundial. And the pharaohs and the scribes knew that it also could be used as a calendar by looking at the length of the shadow. But they didn't tell the commoners that because then they could appear all powerful. So there's that historical aspect of the obelisk, but there's also the science of time and all the patterns that come with that, all the stories and myths that surround it are part and parcel of it. So.
Yeah, a lot of oral history there for sure. Yep, definitely.
And all of the artifacts that are left from ancient civilizations are art. Of
a
sort.
That's
true. Know?
Yeah, right.
And that's how we preserve a lot of our history is through our art.
Right. Yep. Definitely.
Whether it's photographs like you're using for the oral history or whether it's a pyramid or a sphinx or...
Yep. Yeah, definitely. That's
or a painting.
Cool. Yeah. Or like a pot that somebody...
Yeah.
Right.
Ceramics. Yep.
Yep.
Definitely.
Huh. Or clothing too.
Yep.
I mean, that can be pretty artistic, I would say. So... kind of getting back to Boyne City, what's something that you hope never changes about Boyne City?
I hope it doesn't get too big.
Yeah, that seems to be the general theme of what people say.
I
think that the current, city government and stuff, I think they're doing a really good job of kind of managing that and being responsible about, what they let happen, so I feel like they're doing a good job overseeing that.
Yeah. Some of it will be out of their hands because as soon as you get outside the city limits, you're in townships who could say, well, we want to let a box store in or something or have a mall. So I hope that doesn't happen.
Me
I don't
too.
Think it will.
You know,
Petoskey's close enough, Gaylord's close enough, Traverse City's close enough, but there's always that kind of worry.
Yeah, looming kind of.
So...
So then when you came in 83, so you were in the middle school is now? No, you would have been in the old school.
No, where the early childhood learning center is.
Got it.
So if you would come into the early childhood learning center and turn to the right, mine was the first room.
Okay.
And it was attached to the other science room. We had a storeroom there, which... was always a mess, but so from 85 until 95, that was, I didn't teach at the other school at all. They moved after.
Got it.
Yeah, after.
There.
They were just in the process of talking about making that move.
Got it.
Making that change.
Yeah, I kind of remember being in middle school and them talking about the gym and how rough the gym was and how they were... going to have it condemned.
Yeah, and they even, when they added on to the middle school, that was after me.
Yeah, okay.
So, 95 is a long time ago.
It really, truly. I graduated in 99, so that was, whenever I think about that, I'm like, oh man, that was a while ago.
So you were probably one of the last classes that I had.
Yeah, probably then. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because 95, that would have been.
And do you remember the big snake? Were you there when I brought the big snake?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, I remember all of the different animals, the turtles, the little lizardy things.
Right. So, if you remember my room at school, it's kind of just magnified at Raven Hill.
Yep.
Because we still have the animals. Now, when I was there, I would write little grants to get the animals. Now, we're an orphanage for all the animals that nobody wants, so we don't buy any animals anymore.
Okay.
We just take donations of things, you know, people buy a turtle or a bearded dragon at the store, and then their kids lose interest, and nobody wants to take care of it, so they come live with us.
Do you encourage donations, or?
I don't encourage people to go out and buy something and bring it to us.
Definitely.
Because if they do that without asking, they get things that are not hardy enough.
Right.
So, but yeah, we don't turn anything down, although we don't take mammals and birds anymore.
Okay.
There's too many allergies, and
yeah.
So then kids can't rotate through all the different sessions. So
right.
So it's mostly reptiles and a few amphibians at this point. But and then I don't know if you remember, I used to have, and it may have been gone because we opened in '92. So I'm not sure exactly when you were in middle school.
Mm-hmm.
But I had. Neon benders that had made some of the elements, the noble gases, out of glass. And so they would light up. So NE lit up like a neon sign, the orange.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so I had four of them. They were a Christmas present from my husband 1 year. So I had those in my classroom. Well, when we built Raven Hill, now we have a periodic table of the elements that's 20 foot long.
Wow.
And each element has a 1 foot cubby with the ore as much as possible, and then with products that have the elements in. So I took those because they were a Christmas present to me, although I had them in my room. I took them, and those are now in the periodic table at Raven Hill.
Oh, very cool.
So, which is pretty cool because I have a laser sitting there, and it's a helium neon laser. So you can see the helium color and the neon color, and you can see that the laser is in between.
Oh, wow.
And then I have it set up so that there's a radio plugged into the laser. So the sound from the radio gets changed to a light code and goes over and gets picked up by a lens and fed into a speaker. So I can turn on the speaker and you can hear the radio. And I can put my hand up and stop the laser beam and there's no sound.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That must be very impressive.
It is.
For kids.
Yeah. Everybody really likes that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
So yeah, so a lot of the stuff that I had in my classroom, we still do at Raven Hill.
Got it. Got it. How big is Raven Hill?
Acreage?
Yeah.
There's 157 acres that's Raven Hill and another 140 that's Raven Ridge Nature Preserve next door, so we have access to 300 acres.
Wow. Wow, you can do a lot of stuff with that. How about the actual building itself? How big is that?
Well, originally it was 40 by 60. Now it's 40 by 120 plus a little entryway.
Wow.
Plus the fiber studio and the schoolhouse and the maker space, which is wood and clay and metal and glass and printmaking, plus the new evolving technology building.
That's so cool. We're
and the alternative energy house.
Wow.
And did I say the schoolhouse or not? I don't remember.
I don't remember.
The treehouse.
Oh, and the treehouse, right.
Yeah.
We're getting ready to, it's funny that you said makerspace, because we're going to get ready to do an addition here on the library, and one of the things that we're going to do is a makerspace on the lower level. And it's funny because not a lot of people know what that is when they hear it at
right,
first.
Right, right. Yeah, they're pretty popular
thing.
In the bigger towns, Chicago
right.
and Detroit and Ann Arbor and things like that. But we had a whole wood shop donated, so we have that.
Wow.
We already had the printmaking. We've had some metal equipment donated, and we already had some. So in the metal, we'll have capabilities of bringing in instructors to do blacksmithing and welding and soldering and stuff like that. And then we have an antique linotype and letterpress from the 1800s.
That's cool.
Plus we have tabletop presses and stuff that we can use.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have all the woodworking tools, and then the clay studio. It'll be mostly hand building, but we've got a Randall wheel and we've got a kick wheel. And
wow, and that's all been donated.
Some of it's left over from my father-in-law who taught art. And
okay, got
some
it.
Of it we've purchased and as part of different grants and stuff, but a lot of it's been donated too, the
wow.
wood especially.
Wow.
So, and then the fiber studio, that's the one we use the most because we do a lot of natural dyes and French Sûreté and shibori and things
wow.
like that. So,
what a neat thing to be able to teach the community.
Yeah.
We have a board member, Ed Strzelinski. I don't know mm-hmm. if you know his wife,
yeah,
Diane. Yeah.
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 Ed and Diane
huge.
Are volunteers out at
are
Raven
they?
Hill, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. She's, so. I mean, she had this sweater that she wore to something that was just gorgeous. And she was saying how she spun all the yarn yeah. for that. And
yeah.
I have, it's so funny because I have three kids and, you know, I don't know, they're just, I don't know, they don't really, there's just not that connection anymore, you know, like.
Well, they don't see the whole process of anything anymore.
Right.
I mean, back on the farm, they saw it from the sheep, they saw the shearing, they saw the washing of the wool and the carding of the wool and the spinning and then the weaving.
Right.
They don't see all that anymore.
Right.
So
that's awesome that you're able to provide opportunities for them to be able to come out there and see that.
They get a bit more of the process, and sometimes we will try and do the whole process. We try to do that more with teachers and college students than anybody else, where they can come in and spend a week and really see the whole thing.
And then the hope is that they'll go back and teach that to their class. That's
yep.
cool. That's really
yep.
cool. Do you do a lot of those kinds of trainings?
Not as many as we used to, but we're trying to get back into it again. Used to be there was a lot more funding for things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now the funding is harder to get.
Right.
So we're trying to get some sponsors to underwrite things. So
got it.
We'll have, I think we've got 6 classes this summer: glass, clay, metal, fiber, wood, and paper making, I think.
Oh, very
so,
cool.
Yeah. So Kirby Snively will come down and teach a wood class, and they'll make a little bench, which you can use for sitting, but the kids can use it for a workbench. It's got a little bin down below for tools, and
that's cool.
And they don't have to get marker all over the kitchen table. They can use their little bench to do it.
So then do you charge for those classes?
Yeah, and it depends how much underwriting we get, how much we'll have to charge for it. So
right, yeah.
We haven't got that all figured out yet, but
that's kind of some of the bummer, because we've done some classes here with, like, Simple Electronics, and, you know, we like to make everything free, but, you know, to buy all the supplies and everything, right?
It's very difficult.
Yep. Are you guys doing stuff with technology out there, like Arduinos and Raspberry Pis and all that?
No.
Okay.
No. We try to do the problem-solving skills that kids need a lot of practice at, so that they can do those kinds of things.
Got it.
So when I go into a school, for example, or we have somebody come out, magnets is a good example, rather than building a robot that follows a black line across the room, we say, well, you've got to figure out what you want that robot to do. You need to be able to do that before you can build a robot, because if you want a robot that picks up hazardous waste here and needs to put it down over here, that robot you've just built that follows the line isn't going to do you any good.
Right.
So you have to solve the problem before you can build the robot to do the task.
Yep. So kind of like those base problem solving skills.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what we try to concentrate on.
Yeah, those are important to have for sure.
Well, like I said, it doesn't do you any good to build a robot that follows a line if that's not going to solve your problem.
Exactly.
So, anyway. So, you know, there's enough of those other kinds of things going on in the schools that there's no reason for us to compete with them. Let's just build a better foundation for the kids so that when they get up to do that, they are thinking outside the box a little bit as to what they need to do.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, they're, like, you don't really see them making paper or, you know, learning how to do the woodworking type stuff. You know, they have those opportunities maybe more often when they're a little older, but not at the young age. So that's neat that they'll...
Yeah, and so for example, when we make paper with the kids, they make a piece of paper and it's sopping wet. And normally you would use a press to dry it for 3 months or whatever. We iron it. So then we talk to the kids about the changes of state.
Mm-hmm.
So they're getting the art of papermaking. They're getting science of how liquid water changes to a gas, and they can see the steam come off.
Wow.
And the history of, you know, how it first started. First paper wasn't really paper. It was pounded leaves like papyrus and stuff.
Right.
So.
Wow. Do you teach all the classes?
No. I teach a lot of the classes, most of the science ones, but we have artists. I mean, Diane will come, Nancy Hellman teaches.
Oh, okay.
Ed teaches, and then we pull in some artists. And
very cool. And then I know you do your free Saturdays.
We have our free second Saturday program. That's been going since 2010.
That's awesome.
And we usually, you know, there are some months that we don't have, but for the average, we have between 100 and 200 people on those days.
That's awesome. Very cool. Getting a lot of exposure. Yeah. And then you're kind of, you're located in an interesting place, so I'm sure you get probably kids from East Jordan, kids from Boyne.
Yep. And Indian River and Sheboygan and Mackinac City and the UP and
so they come downstate. From all over.
Yeah, that's cool.
So. And I know you do a lot of outreach too, because you've come and done programs here at the library.
Right. In fact, Building a Better World.
Yes.
Is next. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we're
hopefully
excited about that one. Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So I figure that that could be good STEM stuff.
Definitely.
So, yeah, we do a lot of outreach. In fact, that's what keeps us going in the winter, because we're on a big hill and nobody wants to come up the hill. We're trying to resolve that problem, but at any rate, yeah, a lot of outreach into the schools, libraries, and we are in the Michigan Humanities Council touring guide. So actually, you know, I go to Scottville and Flat Rock and Chesterfield Township and lots of different places all over the state as that, part of that.
That's awesome. And so then probably the different organizations are able to apply for those touring grants, too, to bring you in. That's nice.
Yeah.
We've had to do that a couple of times for some different performers, but it's nice that they offer that. So are you, you hear a lot about, like you mentioned before, the STEM, STEAM, you know, you hear a lot about that. Are you happy? I mean, it seems to me like that would be great, you know, for someone who cares about science, that there's such a huge focus on it.
And that's the those critical and creative thinking skills and that problem solving is what that STEM, STEAM stuff is trying to get at. I'm not familiar enough with the actual objectives in school. I know they're trying to fit it in everywhere. I'm not sure that that's quite the, you know, it's kind of the swing of the pendulum one way and then the other.
Yep.
but yeah, I think it's good as long as it's a natural fit. If it's not, if it's a very forced fit, I don't think it's a good idea. But
it's been kind of cool to see, you know. But you're right; it is that pendulum swinging.
Yeah.
It seems like.
And our newest building, our evolving technology building, is in direct response to the STEM and STEAM things because if you ask a kid what technology means, they will immediately say computers.
Right.
Whereas everything is technology.
Absolutely.
And so our evolving technology building, our ET building, has timelines of technology all the way from the present back to the Stone Age.
Wow.
And that includes cooking and cleaning and laundry and sewing, daily life things, toys and games and tools, and then communications, written, audio, visual, and numbers.
Wow.
And so you can go back to the Renaissance and see what they were doing. You can go back to the Stone Age or whatever. One of the interesting things that happened a couple years ago, in the summertime, we had an extended family that had come to visit. And the ET building is not, it's open by request.
Okay.
There's just too many things and we don't have enough staff to watch it. But there were about 12 in this group and they were older children and I thought they might enjoy it. So I took them out there. And the grandfather was Chinese. And when we got back to the ancient world and to the Stone Age era, I have a picture up there, and it's a really pixelated picture, of an early man sending smoke signals.
Oh.
It was the only one I could find, because a lot of them were Native American, and I wanted an older one than that, because smoke signals is one of our very early forms of communication. So anyway, I was saying I haven't figured out how to illustrate smoke signals. I think I need to do a little scene. And this grandfather said, you will want some wolf dung, some wolf droppings, some scat to go with it. And I said, okay, would you explain that? And he said, well, the wolf eats a lot of other animals, so there's a lot of bone and hair in the scat, which burns with a really black smoke. So on the Great Wall of China, where they had signal fires to send messages, they could put their signal fires further apart because the smoke was so black they could see it for a longer distance.
Wow.
So there you go. In the Stone Age, they had the technology of scat. They knew which ones to use for firing pottery. They knew which ones to use for smoke signals.
Yep.
And so now I know what my diorama is going to be. It's going to be a section of the Great Wall of China with some little smoke signal fires on.
That's cool.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and to be able to make that connection with technology.
Right.
You know, like that. Yeah, that
right.
was a form of technology
yeah.
then.
At that point.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're right. Like, if I were to ask my kids, they would say, oh, technology, that's
right.
cell phones, you know, computers. Yep. But you forget that.
And another timeline that's really, we've really been able to pull together a lot is the history of irons for ironing clothes.
Uh-huh.
Everybody knows the sad irons that sat on the stove, but the Egyptians ironed their clothes.
Huh.
They used stone cylinders that they would heat up and roll it on the clothes. Now, the big question becomes, why did people iron their clothes?
Yeah, who cares about wrinkles?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it wasn't wrinkles at all. It was hygiene. You know how bad a dishcloth smells in the summertime on your faucet in the kitchen?
Yeah.
That's mildew. So if the clothes were put away damp, there could be mildew and mold and even maggots where flies would get in and lay their eggs.
Ugh.
And so even the Egyptians ironed their clothes.
Wow.
So we have that history of irons all the way through.
That's cool. And for kids to be able to see that and
yeah.
to learn that,
right.
you know. Right now we iron for, you know, for the wrinkles, but...
Or we use a dryer to dry them totally.
Right.
And they're wrinkle-free.
Yep. Huh.
So...
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
And to be, to make those connections with something that they see today,
yep.
you know. Yeah, you're going to have to probably get a phone booth out there if you don't have one.
That'd be cool. I don't know where I'd put it at this point. But
yeah.
We also have a little patent office out there in the ET building for doing hands-on inventions
kinds
of things. So, yeah.
Do you have examples of some inventions?
I have some patents, yeah.
Oh, Jay Higgins, has he tried to get you to take his grandfather? Has a patent for some kind of machine that it's like a boat that you pedal and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And he's bringing it to the library all the time. Like, you guys gotta see this. This is so cool.
We actually have an exhibit right now of local patents and prototypes.
Oh, wow.
And there are some from Classic Instruments and Industrial Magnetics and East Jordan Ironworks and East Jordan Plastics and stuff like that. So that's been kind of fun. And my son actually holds a patent, and the kids love it because he's never had anybody pick it up to build any because it's pretty expensive, but it's a kaleidoscope water slide.
Ooh.
So you're going down the water slide, but you're inside a kaleidoscope at the same
time. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so the kids think that's really cool.
Did he ever build one?
No. He talked to some of the manufacturers, and... they were interested, but it's exorbitantly expensive for the materials.
Okay.
And then he, Great Wolf Lodge or somebody like that, brought him out and talked to him, but nothing's ever come of it. I keep telling him he should build one at Raven Hill.
Yeah. So
as
people can actually try it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Yeah. That's funny that you mentioned prototypes, because we have a 3D printer in the library.
Right.
Has picked one of those up. And so that's been kind of cool to see people do different prototypes of different things on there and stuff. Do you guys think you'll get a 3D printer?
I would imagine probably at some point we will, but...
Yeah. They're pretty cool.
Yeah.
They take a really long time, though.
Yeah.
That's been kind of hard for kids to understand because they want it now.
Yeah, right. My big thing with that kind of stuff is... that technology always needs to be repaired. And if it breaks, then what are you going to do? You either have to buy another one or you have to have somebody fix it. It's like planned obsolescence.
Yep.
And if you go back to the 1800s and stuff, everything was really sturdy.
Right.
And it didn't work with electricity, so you didn't have to worry about all the components and everything.
It was
just straightforward.
Yep. Yeah, that's like my grandma. She has the hardest time with, like, washers and dryers and things like that, you know, because she's used to buying a washer and dryer and having it last for 30 years, you know, and now they just don't. So, she really struggles with that.
Yeah. So at any rate, it's, If you haven't been out to see it, you should come out and see it, because it's...
I've actually been out a few times.
Have you been to the E.T. building?
Not to the E.T. building, nope.
But you've seen the treehouse.
Yep.
Yeah, so...
Yeah.
Treehouse was 2008. Music Garden was 2009. 2010 was Art and Architecture, which is the miniature houses.
Yep.
11 was the third expansion of Jurassic Park with the coral reef. 12 was the Blurred Boundaries, and that was the pyramid and the Sphinx and the Roman Arch and stuff.
I think that was might have been the last time I was out there, pretty close to that. But yeah, we definitely got to get out there. I'd love to see that E.T. building.
It's awesome. Yeah,
yeah.
It really is cool.
Who does all your exhibits and stuff like that for you?
Pretty much me.
Pretty much you?
Yeah. With input from a lot of other people.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Huh. And do you live out there?
My house is on the other side of the road on past Raven Hill.
Okay.
So I don't live there, but I live there.
Yeah. I was going to say, because it must be hard to, you know, figure out that line between work and home.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Kind of all melds into one most of the time, so.
Right. Especially if it's something that you're passionate about, which clearly you are.
I wouldn't have it any other way right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, you know, let's see. We've been talking for a good 40 minutes, so good. I think we're square here.
Good.
If there's anything else that you want to add.
I don't think so. Just.
Okay.
If you haven't seen Raven Hill, come out and visit.
Got it. Yep.
If you were in my classes, be sure and tell me who you were, because they don't always remember.
And get your time capsule.
Yeah, and get your time capsule if you haven't gotten it. Yeah, a lot of times I'll look at somebody and go, yeah, I'm pretty sure I had you in school, and they'll nod.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So.
Yeah. Cool.
And then sometimes I can call somebody by name. But
really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was a children's librarian here just for a little bit of time, and you know, it's funny, you know, some just really stick with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I bet the kids come up to you and say, remember me?
Yeah. you were my library teacher lady.
Yep.
It's like, oh yeah. Or like the worst would be when, do you know my name?
Yeah.
Like, I probably should, but no, I'm sorry, I don't.
Yeah. It's so funny.
Yeah.
So.
Cool. Well, I'm gonna give this a